Hey, today's program is brought to you by Sunset Lake Sabada. They sent me a sign. Folks, Sunset Lake makes amazing Sabada products. They have tinctures. They have salves. They have a tincture now with melatonin, which is fantastic for your sleeping. Also, just helps you relax. They have infused coffee, which is my weekend blend. They have fudge. They have gummies. They have smokables, smalls, keef, all sorts of different styles of sabbaté. And the best part about it, 100% organic fertilizer. They have they use no pesticides. They use integrated pest management, regenerative farming practices in conjunction with the University of Vermont. They're up outside of Burlington. And on top of all that, they are movement partners and run their company according to the values that we all subscribe to. $15 minimum wage. Most of their employees are own the company. Company's owned by most of the employees, and they've helped us out with our Afghan relief donations. They've donated to the Worcester nurses. They are really active in their community, and fans of the show, they give you 20% off with the code LEFTISBEST. 20% off with the code LEFTISBEST. And they also started a subscription plan where you get 25% off if you sign up for that. All of this at sunsetlakesabade.com. We thank them for their sponsorship. And frankly, I thank them for their product. I use it virtually every night, and it has gotten me off of the Ambien. So I suspect I may be a little sharper when I am older. On with the show.
A Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, October 1, 2021. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Washington Bureau Chief for The Intercept, host of Rising on the Hill, Ryan Grimm will be joining us. Also, later in the program, lefty from way back, David Feldman, will be here. Meanwhile, your government is now funded until December 3rd. Progressives flexed their muscle yesterday. Prevent the infrastructure light vote. Still have a debt ceiling problem, though. Vaccine mandates seem to be working. And Merck announces an after-infection pill that could cut hospitalizations and deaths by 50%. Meanwhile, a federal judge could issue an injunction on that Texas abortion ban today. And unfortunately, an appeals court allows the Biden administration to continue the Trump-initiated Title 42 expulsions of immigrants. ICE gets new directives, will limit the scope of immigrants it should detain. Meanwhile, at the Supreme Court, Samuel Alito complains that the conservative court is getting bad press. Democratic lawmakers testify about their personal abortion stories. Australia returns the world's oldest tropical forest back to indigenous control. Alex Jones found liable for damages in two Sandy Hook cases. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It is Casual Friday. If you are watching the program, you can see that I am respecting the day by wearing a soft-collared shirt. I may just start getting casual through the winter. I mean, that may be my
right. That's how you deal with the seasonal affective depression, right?
My sads. Yes, my actually, sads. I used to legit have that.
No, I mean, it's like, I think we all, at least.
How here, do you not have it now?
Right. I don't, the low grade, sad, that's definitely a part of winter here for sure.
Yes. When I was younger, it was a little more severe. I have, in fact, I think there's still a light box in that office that, I used to sit in front of, but, that's neither here nor there. Joining us, or joining me as she does always. She's not really joining me. She's just where I'm joining her. Emma Vigeland. Hello, Emma.
Hello. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for coming to my show.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. You're not getting paid to be here, just so you know.
I understand. Believe me, it's a rough business.
It's more of just like a
I got used
benefit
to first...
you. You want more publicity, so you've got to come on my show for that, right?
I mean, it helps. I get a lot more Twitter action when I show up on this thing. And
follow him at Sam Seether. Maybe he'll tweet something.
Thank you. Yeah. I want to, before, you know, I want to play, obviously, we're going to get into, there's a tremendous amount going on in Washington, but I don't want this story to be lost. Australia has returned the oldest tropical forest in the world, which had become Australia's Daintree National Forest. So it had become basically a national reserve, I guess. It has an incredible biodiversity, including ancient and rare species. I don't know much about it. It has been a UNESCO World Heritage Site since 1988. They say that there are 135 million year old. It is a tropical rainforest that has been around for 135 million years. They have giant clawed cassowary birds and plants that have existed since the age of the dinosaurs.
Oh, my God.
But it has come under difficulties because of climate change and different industries, including logging. Australia has returned it to the Eastern Kuka Yalanji people. I'm probably butchering the pronunciation of that. And they're indigenous folk who lived in the rainforest, you know, back in 1780s or late 80s or early 1790s when British settlers came and essentially began to, you know, treat their indigenous people like, well, I guess like we did. Here, some of us were British at that time, and they've returned it. And the reason why I just want to cite this is that there is a slow movement that is growing to return many of our national parks to the indigenous people of this land. And the idea is not that we wouldn't have access to these parks; it's that they would retain control and responsibility for caring for these parks and setting policies that are to protect these things. And so from the perspective of wanting to protect these geographic phenomena, and from the perspective of justice, great idea.
Right.
And
I want to also, there's a Squamish Nation thing kind of on the same like land back kick, Sam. If Bradley, you could put up this tweet. Squamish Nation owns many parcels around Vancouver exempt from local zoning. With 87% of the nation voting in favor, they're going to build 6,000 homes at Hong Kong density, 90% less parking than required by law. And besides single family neighborhoods who cannot speak Sinakwa. I mean, just I think this sort of like land back thing, and like you mentioned, the national parks, there's also like Lambeck that is broader than that. Like, I think it is really going to be important as we adjust to how we should structure cities and society, and even like you said, like forestry in the future.
Yeah.
Yep. So I just wanted to cite that, but we should go on to now the, obviously the big stories. Yesterday there was a plan by House leadership to hold a vote on the bipartisan infrastructure framework. This was pushed by moderates as a way of decoupling and breaking the deal that was made amongst Democrats to do a two-track process of the reconciliation bill and the smaller, you know, infrastructure light bill that Republicans and
Highway Plus.
And the moderates wanted to split this apart because they that was the way that they could basically avoid having to pass the Biden agenda, if you will. And progressives said, you break the deal, we're not voting for it. And they held. And the reason why we don't have any type of real agreement yet on the reconciliation bill is for two reasons. One is Kyrsten Sinema. The other is a guy who was hanging on his yacht yesterday and had to answer some questions from activists.
A guy who clearly has a wonderful understanding of optics.
Yes, this is like John. This is worse than John Kerry windsurfing in August of 2004 optics.
Yeah, a yacht is as comical as it gets.
And he it's this type of pressure, I think, that is very unhelpful as a senator from West Virginia. But here it is.
Let me talk if you can. Where are y'all from? Anybody from West Virginia? We have
yes.
West Virginians?
We have a lot of West Virginians.
God bless you all. But gang, we're working hard. We really are. We're going to continue to, in good faith. We want to get a good bill that's a balanced bill, that's well done. And I know it won't be enough for some. It'll be too much for others. In West Virginia,
what?
You know, West Virginia's a little bit different than it used to be.
There's a lot of poverty. What are you going to do for the poor in West Virginia?
We're going to be working everything we can to create good opportunities.
And we need to tax the rich.
Well, I agree with that.
I agree with that.
That's the one number thing we should be doing is fixing the tax code so everybody pays their fair share. We should be also negotiating for lower drug prices. We should be doing all these things.
Hold pharma accountable.
I agree with you 1,000%. We're all on the same page, gang. We really are. Well, we have here. Let me just explain on that one. We will get to that eventually, but right now we can't even take care of it. It's going to go broke in 2026. Let us fix and prepare that first.
That's not true. Tax the rich.
We're taxing the rich. I agree. We're going to make the rich and the famous pay.
And the famous.
And the famous.
It'll be almost heaven.
More year on non-discretionary, basically non-defense.
Not enough.
Not enough. You know, we pay. Let me just give
yes,
you all this.
But I'm just saying we can afford.
This is insane.
I know.
Wait, I got one little bit of information for you. The Republicans are likely to take over.
That's a
the
shame,
Senate. We don't. This is like this is our one chance right now to pass.
If you don't pass this, we're going to pass things like this for the people. They're not going to pass things like this for the people. We can't wait.
I love these people.
Unbelievable.
Isn't it amazing? Isn't it amazing? Just like the visual of people having to get on kayaks because the dude is off on his yacht. He doesn't even want to be in. There's a fly here. He doesn't even want to be in the area. All right, now I'm getting distracted. There's a fly in front of my face. He doesn't even want to be on land where he can be confronted by people, so he goes to his beautiful almost heaven yacht, and then people have to literally kayak to reach him.
It is pretty stunning. I like, he's like, he wants to get the famous. You gotta tax the famous too, not just the rich, but the famous. I guess that's his way of saying, like, there's, you know, we, of course, the rich, but let's also think about the famous, because
how do you do that?
Because I'm on a yacht.
What if they're like famous but not wealthy anymore? Are you gonna tax their like Twitter followers?
Yeah, right. Please don't tax Sam, for example.
I mean, the optics are amazing. His and I gotta think, and I also sort of wonder what he's saying when he says West Virginia isn't like it used to be. I don't know if that's his saying that, like, you know, people are. I really not clear on what he's getting at there, but it's fascinating. Things like that can't help him. Things like that simply can't help him, and that's good. He's feeling the pressure, and we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Ryan Grimm about, among other things, the signed memo between Joe Manchin and Chuck Schumer. My understanding, it was not a lease agreement for some time on the yacht. It was, in fact, Joe Manchin's offer, I guess, as to what the country deserves, according to him, in terms of infrastructure. We will talk about that in a moment. But first, we have some sponsors of today's program. One is my, coincidentally, what I ate for breakfast today. As you know, growing up, cereal, one of the best parts about being a kid. But, of course, we give it up when we're older because we don't want to put all that sugary junk into our system. We realize we don't want to. Frankly, I don't want to give that stuff to my kids. Magic Spoon is the amazing cereal that has the flavors you love without all the bad stuff. Magic Spoon has 0 grams of sugar. I repeat, 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving. Only 140 calories per serving. It is keto-friendly. It is gluten-free. It is grain-free. It is soy-free. It is low-carb. You can build your own box, so you can choose 4 of the available flavors to build your very own custom bundle. Choices are cocoa, fruity, frosted, peanut butter, blueberry, cinnamon, cookies and cream, and maple waffle. That's right. Cookies and cream, maple waffle, newest additions. They just brought back those super popular flavors. I just had some apple cinnamon, which was one of their special secret seasonal flavors. Mm. Also delicious. For me, I'm a peanut butter and cocoa guy generally, or the cinnamon. Cinnamon, I have to say, more often than not. But it is, I mean, it's become a staple, frankly, of breakfast for me and sometimes a snack. I'm not going to lie, in the middle of the night. Go to magicspoon.com/majorityreport. To grab a custom bundle of cereal and try it today. Be sure to use our promo code MajorityReport at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it is backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they refund your money, no questions asked. Remember, it's magicspoon.com/MajorityReport. Use the code MajorityReport to save $5 off. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for being one of our sponsors of this episode and our and my breakfast. And also another product that I use on a regular basis. Emma loves this. This is something like if I could, I would give out to our guests just because of like the tweets we would get after this. But what am I talking about? Tushy. It is a modern bidet that attaches directly to your toilet in under 10 minutes, and it will change your life. Sometimes it's the small things. This ends up being one of those things where you're like, oh my God, so obvious. Heard about it, thought it was weird, and tried it out, never going back. Whenever I leave my tushy equipped bathroom, there's a slight bit of sadness that I'm going to have to maybe possibly use some other type of toilet. Bottom line, Tushy is the modern bidet for people who go to the bathroom. All you get to do, poop, wash, pat dry. Super easy. The Tushy bidet washes your bum with water, which gives you a better clean than toilet paper. Think about it, folks. You wash your hands. You don't just wipe it with paper. Also, washing with water, less irritating, more soothing for your derriere. The Tushy bidet is easy to install. It attaches to the toilet in under 10 minutes. No electricity or plumbing needed. Using a Tushy bidet reduces your toilet paper by 80%. It saves you money. It is actually incredibly reasonable. You'll be surprised at how inexpensive this Tushy is relative to like what you anticipate a bidet costing you. It is eco-friendly. It is stylish. Start washing with a Tushy bidet for a better clean. Go to hellotushy.com/majority. Get 10% off plus free shipping. This is a special offer for our listeners at hellotushy.com/majority for 10% off. And after you buy and install your Tushy, show it off. Tag at hellotushy on Instagram. So check it out. Let's see. Give me 1 second here, and then we will go and bring in Ryan Grimm.
Sorry about that.
1 second. 1 second.
Sorry about that. I let him
That's in. Okay. Bradley, if you can also send that to our next guest. Okay. We are back. And joining us once again, the Washington Bureau Chief of The Intercept. Also host of The Hills Rising. Is that like, are you locked in on that now?
No, I'm just still filling in for Crystal whenever she gets back.
Acting, host.
Not sure where she went. It's just been a while since
sometimes people
seen her around the studio.
And check that out. And
the Kurt Rambis of Rising.
Ryan Grimm, ladies and gentlemen. Ryan, of course, I'm here with Emma Vigeland.
Hey, Ryan.
Hey, Emma.
So, Ryan, I think people have the general contours of what happened yesterday. We will get it. But I want to start with Manchin, because you had a piece yesterday, I think it was. Some things have come out about incidentally, you know, your email is up on your
I didn't want to say that out loud. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's there. Maybe we can. Put a grab. There it's
gone. Oh, okay. There good. You are. That's just. You. Yeah. Sorry about
that. All right. We will work on that in the future. But, so you did a piece on Joe Manchin. There were some revelations that came out about Joe Manchin. I think it was yesterday. In addition to this idea of Joe Manchin claiming not to know about the two-track plan. Walk us through this, because this seems super impressive. Like, doesn't he have a phone on his yacht? Doesn't he have the internet on his yacht?
Well, right. So one of the talking points that progressives were starting to use was, look, we had a deal. And we had a deal carries a lot of weight in Congress. It's supposed to. And it's supposed to carry extra weight in the Senate, which is the most self-important institution on the planet. And the self-important people in that institution have always prided themselves that whatever you think of them, their word is their bond. And so even though it's not quite true, or right, really never has been, that's the mythology, and mythology matters. And so to deploy that against the Senate and say, we had a deal, this was always the deal, you're trying to break the deal, you're the bad guys here, matters to senators, particularly senators like Joe Manchin. And so he's like, yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't have anything to do with this. And he went way too far in his denials. If he would have said, I understand that Schumer, Biden, Pelosi, Sanders, and others have always wanted to do these as two tracks, but I never signed anything. And I never promised that I wouldn't try to screw you out of the reconciliation package. Then maybe he would have been okay. But to go and all the way to the other end and say that he'd never heard of this thing is just absurd, because the quote that, so.
Well, because everyone listening to us now heard about that.
Yeah.
Yes. And they heard about it from Joe Manchin. So if you remember, when Biden announced the bipartisan deal, Pelosi and Schumer were like, this is part of a two-track strategy. And Biden said, I'm not signing the infrastructure bill until the reconciliation bill is passed. This is always has been a two-track strategy. Republicans freaked out. And they're like, this is unfair. How could you do this to us? Who came to Joe Biden's defense? Joe Manchin. Joe Manchin said publicly, what are you talking about? There's always been a two-track strategy. That's what the strategy is. Like that was Joe Manchin that afternoon when they were coming after Joe Biden. All so he knew.
But let's be fair. That was months ago.
Like, yeah, this is June we're talking about. So
yeah, this is
end of June. Yeah.
Pandemic wears months. On everybody.
3 months, yes.
It wears on everybody.
He's got the fog. He's got the, yeah.
Plus, you got to think about how much responsibility you have with a boat like that. And things sometimes
just a money pit. You know, it's, everything's always breaking.
And that was before he had his secret backroom deal with Chuck Schumer, which I'm sure we're going to get into a little bit.
That was a month before that. Yeah.
Month before. Many things have changed. Some things we didn't even know about.
All right. Well, this is let's talk about the Schumer thing, because this is also pretty stunning. What's stunning about this is that Schumer like seemed to have signed off on a deal and not told anybody.
Well, he didn't. So what that is, and what those documents are, is that's an opening bid. And so Manchin signs it and he writes at the bottom, Manchin does not guarantee that he will vote for this if these conditions aren't met, which is different than saying Manchin will oppose. You know, and then when Schumer signed it, he writes underneath it, and I will keep pushing you on these issues. So it's like, it's an acknowledgement of an opening bid.
Right.
It is interesting that they kept it secret until now. Yeah, that was his opening bid.
Right.
Like, it'd be nice to know, like, at the end of July, what his opening number was.
Did Biden not know this, or did Biden know this that was the number?
Who knows what Biden knows? Ron Klain probably knew.
Okay. Well, I guess that's what I meant. I mean, was there somebody who was aware of it in the administration?
Absolutely had to be. Yeah.
And so
they're very good at not leaking this crew compared to the last administration.
Yes.
And the idea that why you want to hold that, why you want to keep that under wraps, if you're Schumer, is because you want to make it seem like this is a last minute negotiation. Like, I mean, like, I can guess where you're going to land. If you say 1.5 and I say 3.5, I can guess where we're going to land.
Yes.
Right. I mean, it's almost like, you know, like Manchin
almost
said, like, Chuck,
round.
I yeah. don't want you to have to actually break out the calculator for this or to do like complicated math. So I'm just going to say 1.5, because if I say 1.7, then we're going to have to go to the third digit or something. I mean, and let's just keep it simple. Did Manchin put that out there because he's feeling the heat? Like, there are two, I noticed there were two statements that were put out yesterday, Manchin and Sinema. And maybe, well, let's start with Manchin, because then I want to talk about what we're seeing from the sort of Sinema camp to get a sense of what, whether she's feeling pressure. When I look at that video of Joe Manchin having to respond to West Virginians from a balcony, like even if it was just a balcony, that would have been bad view, right? Look, like looking down on the people. This is like he's like Eva Peron, but he's on a massive mansion. I mean, on a massive
yacht.
That
which
says
is called,
West Virginia, called what? Like,
that says almost heaven.
Almost heaven,
right? Like, yeah.
The almost, John Denver song.
Almost godly compared to you plebeians. He might as well have called his
Well, no,
that.
I mean, that's a John Denver reference, so that's going to be fine. And
it's allowed, I guess. Right. But in terms of the holistic of the optics, I don't know.
Well, I mean, the point is, though, the people in West Virginia are probably going like, wow, that's a nice yacht.
Yeah, but the people of West Virginia, though, tend to like politicians who are patrician. Like they had Shelley Moore Capito replaced Rockefeller.
Yeah,
like they right. there's a inferiority complex in West Virginia that results in voters there wanting well-dressed, well-spoken, articulate representatives of their state that will belie the reputation that they hate about West Virginia. So
you don't think that's a problem for him, at least in West Virginia?
But, yeah, if he cleans up nice and owns a yacht, like that's putting out a good image. Now that's been the politics for decades. The new Trumpian politics that are sweeping the country, where rich people pretend to be like white working class people, will, I think, eventually creep into West Virginia, and you'll start getting some rich fake poor people. But
well, I mean, he could pretend that he was just working on the boat.
That's right. Yes, with his overalls. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just cleaning toilets.
Exactly. Like, yeah. Just, you know, doing.
But that's not West Virginia yet. They still, because when you're authentically struggling, you're ashamed of that. It's only right. later when you come out of it.
Well,
that
you take
pride in what you came through.
That's Trump's allure too, on some level, right?
Exactly. When you're authentically struggling, you try to cover it up. And you're embarrassed about it, and you lie about it. And so that's what they want in their politicians.
And now, Joe Manchin, it feels like there is less to work on. On some level, he just feels like he is riding shotgun for Kristen Sinema. And that, like, you know, he'll make it seem like he's making his own decision. But he just knows that, like, there's camera time for me as long as she's doing this. That's the way it feels like to me. Yesterday, can we put up that headline?
Yeah,
from this Politico Axios piece or the Axios.
Axios, yeah.
This story came out in Axios. I imagine you've seen it. Can we put it up, Bradley?
He's getting it. Yeah.
And this is also, there was also a Kristen Sinema's allies have some free advice for anyone trying to bully the wine drinking triathlete into supporting Biden's $3.5 trillion budget bill. She doesn't play by Washington's rules, and she's prepared to walk away. Now, I don't know if, like, are we supposed to believe people don't drink wine in Washington? That's why she doesn't play by Washington's rules. I mean, what? I like, right. This is such a strange, but Do you now a story like this gets written because Sinema sort of tells her her people to, you know, put out this story like this story, right? This is not a story that somebody says like, hey, I want to take this angle. Mm-hmm. And this is a story that is planned, particularly when it's like an Axios or Politico or, you know, Punchbowl. I mean, this is their sort of like, it's almost like sponsored content practically. Is this an indication that they're feeling pressure?
Yes, it absolutely is. And she gave that away just yesterday. She put out this incredibly defensive statement. If you saw this, where she said,
we have this, actually, we can pop this up too, but
yeah,
go ahead.
It's just, she said, it's false to say that I haven't, that Senator Sinema hasn't, you know, been participating in good faith in negotiations, that I haven't, you know, laid out what my concerns are. And that to me is one of the most hopeful signs we've gotten from her the entire time, because it shows that the pressure does work, that she is feeling the heat. And it also opens up a window into what her Achilles heel is. So she is a very, very smart woman. She graduated high school. You know, she struggled a lot coming up. I think she exaggerated it a bit, but she struggled a lot coming up. She was valedictorian at 16, graduated college at 18, got a PhD while serving in the House. Like, this is a very intelligent person. She also puts out these like ditzy vibes, and she knows that. And as a result, I'm certain that she's been underestimated intellectually and condescended to in a misogynistic way, like her entire life. And so that is a sensitive area for her. And so now here she is being accused of not being serious, of not doing her homework, of not engaging in good faith in these negotiations. And that's the thing that prompted this defensive statement from her. So if that's the thing that she feels defensive about, that she's not acting in good faith, then the only way for her to prove that she is to cut a deal.
Right.
Like, otherwise, well, I mean, that criticism just sticks then.
But like the idea that we have to cajole this like woman's deep-seated insecurities, like about, I mean, I'm so unsympathetic to that position. I guess it all comes down to humanity, right?
Right. If you look at how, say, like an LBJ got things through. It was, you know, all of the things that we know about, but it was also being like a remarkable reader of people and understanding right. what their vulnerabilities were and how to exploit them for, you know, for what he needed.
Well, she's enormously performative. And I think that there also was probably a way to play into that impulse as well. I mean, she dresses like a child. She's like wants to have the FU ring. How can you allow her to put up the FU without entirely tanking the Biden agenda? That's the needle that needs to be threaded here.
Right. And if she can get a ton of attention along the way and then sign on, that could meet everybody's coinciding interests.
I think, well, there's two things that occur to me. One is parents, regardless of how smart your kids are, don't put them too far ahead in
right.
in
what
schooling
are you doing? Right.
Because they're going to have social issues. And that's what it's just sort of honestly. Yeah. That's what
graduating
sort of
college
like.
At 18 is not healthy.
No, I actually think that it's not, and we're seeing part of that is like
Condoleezza Rice
up in the black block at 19.
Condoleezza Rice too, right? She was another. Didn't she graduate college at like 19 herself?
Yeah. It catches up. It catches up with you because then all of a sudden you're just like you're not a prodigy anymore. You're just like a smart person amongst, you know, people, and smart people aren't necessarily rewarded in our society. Right. So please, your kid could grow up to be a senator. Keep them with at least, you know, close to their age cohort so they don't feel like they're
right. And it's not just the misogyny. You're right. So she definitely would have been, singled out for that. But right. So she's always like she was 16 years old, 17 years old around, 20, 21 year olds in college. And so they were condescending to her for that, too.
It's insane that we have to have this conversation on some level, like Emma's saying, like, it's just insane that we are, talking about, her personality in this context. But that is in part because there doesn't seem to be, like Joe Manchin, you can figure out he's a pretty corrupt guy. He is so transactional that it's like even beyond like, he's not even delivering. When he's delivering for West Virginians.
One particular,
he lives with them. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Like it's literally they're on part of that boat, they're sitting at his Thanksgiving table. But Kristen Sinema, it is very difficult to see what she gets out of this because even if she gets the attention that you're talking about, there may not be a formal, Democratic Party revolt in Arizona. She may not, Chuck Schumer may not pour millions into her opponent's war chest or something. But I think there's going to be people who are just like, yeah, go ahead. And she's going to have a real problem in the primary. So it's hard.
Right. And people have said, well, she wants to retire and become a lobbyist. But you can't alienate your entire party.
Right.
And then become a lobbyist. She could lobby Republicans, but if you're a corporation, you're better off hiring a Republican to lobby Republicans. And Mark Kelly is showing that, you can be, politically, Arizona is trending bluer. West Virginia is trending redder. And so she could coast on Mark Kelly style politics and be senator for life. And so that's I think what you're getting at with this like irrational this question of the rationality of what's going on here. She could be a corporate friendly, center left Democrat and cruise, but clearly that's not what she wants.
Yeah.
So what does she want?
Exactly. The end game is not terribly clear. I mean, it's not hard to be a two-term senator like the one you describe and then go get a corporate job.
Right.
I mean, it's not like,
it's there for the taking.
Maybe the pharmaceutical industry is going to be like, come be a special VP. You can run our Instagram account or something for $2 million a year or whatever it is. Like, I mean, I guess that's possible, but that seems like, pretty narrow.
Right. And like once the $2 million's gone, what do you do next?
What do you do next? That's a dead end job. I mean, because, there's going to be some other, new social media that's going to come up behind you and you're going to be left out in the lurch. Right. I mean, so, but okay. So where do you think we are in terms of those two are in some respects dictating what's happening in the House. And what's happening in the House is fascinating, it seems to me, for multiple reasons. Because for the first time in my recollection, progressives have basically said, we're willing, we're not taking the half sandwich or the quarter sandwich. I mean, I remember Harry Reid saying at one point, like, don't let, you know, take the half sandwich. Don't let the good be the enemy of the perfect. I think they basically said, like, you know what? This is not good. And right. we are going to let what you call good be the enemy of what we think is even less than perfect. And we will sink this. And at least Nancy Pelosi believes them because she won't bring it up for a vote. I mean, or hasn't yet. Give me your sense of, like, what happens next, but what are also the implications of the progressives finally doing that?
Well, you're right. Pelosi has to listen to them now. You had Josh Gottheimer on CNN yesterday saying that he was 1,000% certain that this bill would pass, that it would go to the floor and that it would pass, which shows, and in some ways you can't blame him, because if nobody has ever lost money, you know, betting against progressives. And so, but for the first time, he would have lost money if he'd have put it down there. Part of it, like you said, is that there's some good things in this bipartisan infrastructure bill, but it's not obvious that on the whole, it's a good thing when you factor in the way that it, injects more money into the fossil fuel infrastructure, you know, at the expense of clean energy. And so progressives are able to justify voting it down in a way beyond just we wanted more, to be able to say, actually, this is bad. So if you want us to vote for something that is either neutral or maybe bad, then you have to give us something good to pair with it. The slogan in the early days was, you know, no climate, no bill or whatever. And that's still the case. Like, the climate provisions are mostly all in the reconciliation package. So they're saying, if you want this bricks and mortar, these roads and bridges, you want all this money for your gas guzzling buses, you have to also give us this climate money.
I don't feel like there was enough of that work, although obviously it was enough for them, but it didn't feel like there was a lot of, like, tilling of that ground over the past, you know, month or two. It was,
well, I think that they were, I think their thinking was, if we can do this work internally, that's enough, because we also don't want to sour the public attitude toward this bill that we're ultimately going to pass
and trump it. Okay, I see. Yeah. Yes, because to pass, let's say, $4 trillion worth of new spending over the course of 10 years, just we'll remind people of that, is a good thing. Some of that stuff is going to get good on balance. That 500 billion of new money over the course of 10 years may be both insufficient in some areas, not deployed in the way you want it to be, but there's still money in there that you could sort of, like, couple in the bundle of all of it, right, and promote.
And there's, you know, there's broadband, and, you know, there's unquestionably, like, good things tucked in that thing as well, tucked in that 500 billion.
Well, I just wanted to ask you too, while we're still talking about the CPC, how much do you think that Jayapal being, like, basically the sole leader in this area and the power being consolidated? One, I mean, it's helpful that there are more members of the squad, but to me, I've never seen it. The CPC wield their power in a way that is this, like, streamlined and effective. And I think you can credit Jayapal's leadership, but I'm curious about what your sense of it is.
But I think it helped tactically because they can move faster. And, you know, both Pocan and Jayapal would say in the past, just because they're so busy, they're doing a million different things, that it would take like 6 hours to get both offices to sign off on a statement. And by then, you know, everybody's moved on. So, you know, they're able to move faster and be more nimble. But I think structurally, there's a lot more going on than just that. Like, I think if you went back in 2009 and said, it's not going to be co-chair Lynn Woolsey and Raul Grijalva. It's going to be just chair Raul Grijalva, but you don't get a much better outcome for all of the structural reasons that have changed since then.
And by structural reasons, I mean, is it your sense, like, this feels to me the beginnings of the Congressional Progressive Caucus basically starting to show the outlines or the contours of what they're going to expect out of their caucus. Like, because it's always been like, I want to brand myself as a progressive. Okay, your branding yourself as a progressive increases the value of our brand, so that's fine. You don't have to do anything. Right. You don't have to right. You don't even have to take any right. positions that agree with us. You can just like make it seem like we're powerful. But it feels like in this situation, right, that we're getting a sense that there's at least 50, but around 50, about half of the caucus seems to be the ones who are committed for the most part, right? I mean, this is a pretty slam dunk mm-hmm. to get all of the people in the Congressional Progressive Caucus to sign on, it seems to me. They had some people outside of the caucus who were saying we're not going to vote for it too, which I think mm-hmm. was very helpful.
That was.
What is your sense of that process that's going on there?
The big shift and on the structural side was the alignment of so many swing seat Democrats with progressive Democrats. You know, back in 06, 08, 09, a lot of the swing seat Democrats were in rural areas that were trending more Republican and wanted to do less. They didn't want to do the climate bill. They didn't want to do Obamacare. The ones who voted for it, you know, voted for it believing that it was a political loser, but it was their duty as a Democrat to vote for it. Whereas this time around, you have a bunch of people like Angie Craig, Katie Porter, Johanna Hayes, Susan Wild in Allentown, like who have been making the argument, Mike Levin, California, that we need this for reelection. Like actually like doing something is actually politically good and beneficial. And so it was that alignment of those interests that gave progressives so much cover. Because in the past, they'd say, hey, by you forcing us to do all of this taxing and spending, you're going to put our frontline members at risk and you're going to cost us our majority. How dare you? But instead, they were able to say, no, go ask the people who are running in these swing districts what they think. And you ask them and they're like, no, we need this. Like we need infrastructure. And Katie Porter's made this point, infrastructure. Everybody likes infrastructure. That money's not going out the door for years. But if we do the child tax credit, if we do child care subsidies, like we can run on that. We can point to your pocket and be like that you have that because we gave it to you.
And really on some level, it's going to look like you lost that because we didn't do anything.
Right.
Oh, because yes. They have it right now. I mean, it's going until January.
In January, the Democrats will be responsible for doubling child poverty.
Yep.
If they don't do anything.
Yep. Let me ask you this, and I don't want to get too narrow with something that was like a online thing. But there was a big controversy at the beginning of the year, you may be aware of an attempt by some members of the internet world that some of whom identified as left, arguably, that they should. The members of the squad should, and progressives in general, I guess, in the House should withhold their votes for Nancy Pelosi's leadership and in return get a vote on Medicare for All, which would have surely lost at a minimum 113. Like that's the number of people who signed on to co-sponsor it to the remainder of the House, which is about 320, I guess. So it's 320. Had they done that, had they been successful, had they decided this is a good idea for whatever reason, and they had done that, and they had gotten their vote, and they lost their vote, and then that was the end of the strategy, do you think, and let's assume that that also dragged out for a couple of days, because it probably would have.
That's what they were calling for. Yeah.
They were calling to drag it out so that it would create some notice that there was going to be a vote on Medicare for All.
Which was January 4th and 5th, right?
Right. And hopefully they get it done by the 6th. But let's just eliminate that, because that would have been very hard to predict that that was going to happen. Yeah. But what we do know would happen would be that it would push back the infrastructure bill. I mean, the COVID relief bill, right? Because that came in very quickly a couple of weeks later. And it would have slowed the construction of that bill. Do you think at that point that they would be gun shy to do this time? Like, I mean,
it depends on how it played out. But if they took heat for making them look like clowns, particularly while people are voting in Georgia for those two Senate races,
right?
All for a vote that then, you know, got hammered. The next time they came back and were like, we need to organize and vote as a block, the stink of that would certainly be on the strategy. And you might be less likely to get that key addition, which was the center, they're not centrists really, but the swing district Democrats who were like, no, that you guys are right. We do need to vote as a block on this.
Right.
Because then it would be all tied up in these, in the last effort, which.
Right. There's something called keep your powder dry for when you really need it. When for when the whites of the eyes are there. And this is that moment, right? I mean, this is the make or break moment. If the progressives don't do this, and they still may not get, you know, we may not, it may be nothing. But this was their, I think it seems to me, their place to take a stand that has the opportunity to provide meaningful material difference to people's lives, as opposed to a stunt that was ostensibly to identify the enemies of Medicare for All, which was, you know, which is, you know, I think we all know. I mean, Nancy Pelosi is one of the biggest ones. Yes. Let me just also ask you about this in terms of the strategy, and then I just want to move to the debt ceiling for a moment. Looking back, do you think there was? I mean, talk about the dilemma, because I know that I read stuff on The Intercept. I know that when you're writing stuff, and I think, you know, we talk about this here too, because you never hear the military budget in 10-year chunks. Now, I understand it's partly because of reconciliation rules, and so it's a shorthand. But, I mean, even from the political messaging, you never hear somebody say, like, we have just passed, the House has now passed $7-8 trillion budget for the Pentagon, minimum, because we know it never goes down for the next 10 years.
Veterans Affairs and all that.
Right. Yeah. Right. I mean, just $8 trillion. Should the Democrats have at one point, or the progressives, start referring this to as a $350 billion a year expenditure? I mean, because then it doesn't seem as historic on some level, but, you know, like, at what point should they have pivoted?
You're right. It cuts both ways. Like, you want people enthusiastic about it, but you don't want people panicked about it. And then you'll get people quibbling with, well, a lot of this is front loaded. So it's actually, you know, $600 billion in the first year. And then it's not $350 billion every single year. And so, you know, once you get the pedants in there, you have to pull the pencils out and start. And Democrats are so insistent on getting all of those details right that it certainly gets in the way of their messaging.
Right.
Whereas Republicans don't, you know, cannot be bothered at all by details like whether the numbers are precise. But I think certainly it would be smart to start referring to the Pentagon's budget in the 10-year window. Maybe this is what you're referring to in a story. We called it a $350 billion reconciliation bill yesterday in a story.
Yes, I did notice that.
Which and then but then if you do it for the infrastructure bill, then it's a $55 billion bill. They call it $1.2 trillion, but $600+ billion of that is just annual expenditure that's just being re-upped. So it's 550 new, which is 55 over 10 years. So it's
nothing.
And it's nothing. And the military, what was the military increase?
It was 28 over what the Pentagon asked.
So the addition to the military budget
is half of what they're passing right now, right? Like the non
historic once in a generation.
The bonus. The bonus. You didn't ask for this, but you've been good.
You did so good in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
You earned this.
All right. So let's talk about the other thing that's going on. The continuing resolution got punted to December. I mean, that's going to get taken care of. That seems to always do. The debt ceiling. What is going on with the debt ceiling? Because is Chuck Schumer, does he just keep pretending like there's no solution to this so that he can make Mitch McConnell get up in front of everybody and say, you know, like,
partly, feels, yeah.
It, so what's the other reason? Because it feels like the political, like the politics of this, like are silly. I mean, like, it's not like who is going, this is not going to resonate with anybody. It seems to me.
No, I don't think it will either. I think he miscalculates that. They should have done it. I didn't tell them to do it, so I can't complain. But they should have done it in the February American Rescue Plan. Just put it in there and get rid of it for the next 4 years. Because you're in your honeymoon period, and you can say, you can call it the Trump debt ceiling, because at that point it's all
right
Trump debt. They didn't do that. Chuck Schumer, for some reason, thinks that he can really play and own McConnell by making McConnell look like McConnell.
He's impervious to hypocrisy shaming. This is just like, I'm deeply.
You got him.
I mean, okay, so for the debt ceiling, what is it? October 18th is the deadline, right? If this is going to go through reconciliation, how much time is there? There's very, very little wiggle room to keep playing this game.
Yeah, they would need to hustle.
And which reconciliation is it going to go into? Like, is there a?
They talk about doing a separate one, which is crazy. You could. McConnell wants them to stick it in this one. He thinks that's his big play. That
because
then he can say they had to add $28 trillion in debt.
I see.
In order to pass their government takeover of the economy.
And what is, has anyone that you have interacted with in the course of your reporting said something to the effect of like, they're thinking about sticking it in the reconciliation bill, because then it becomes sort of a must vote for, doesn't it? Or does it?
There are a lot of House members want to do that.
Because
of their frustration with the Senate. They're like, well, maybe that'll make the Senate finally just do it.
Will it? I mean, what is the sense of people who have a sense in the Senate say? Because I've talked to some people who said, who aren't in the Senate, but they sort of have a sense of it a little bit, that they're afraid that that would keep Manchin from voting for it because he'd be offended.
Yeah, right. Schumer doesn't like it. But he's going to have to figure something out. And then you have this irony of McConnell saying Democrats have to do this on their own. We're not helping.
Oh, you're frozen. Sorry, go ahead. You're frozen.
Trying to do it on their own. They will pass it. No, Democrats will do it on their own. Like, they would pass it. They would have Harris break the tie and pass it 51-50. But McConnell won't allow that either. He's filibustering it.
Yeah.
So one option is just say, you know what, we're going to have a carve out to the filibuster for voting rights and for debt ceiling.
Why do you think McConnell is doing that, where they could just take this very clean vote and make it really clear?
I think he's enjoying watching Schumer squirm.
Mm. And also, it just gives more appearance of dysfunction for the Biden agenda, right? Like, they want to maybe have all of this chaos thrown in.
Yeah.
Just saw this earlier and wanted to let you guys know. I sent it to you, Sam. Cinema just left DC, according to two sources.
I mean, this is, but that to me sounds like someone's under a lot of pressure.
It's 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
Right.
It sounds to me like somebody's under a lot of pressure, and the best way to deal with it sometimes is to step out. And this is, I mean, it's really stunning. I mean, what is your sense about is Biden sitting there going like, she'll come around, or is he going,
he's had her over there like four times.
I mean, and does anybody have a clue? I mean, this is just so bizarre, and it's just amazing to me. Like, and you know, I mean, frankly, the she should be getting the Stephen Miller treatment, as far as I'm concerned, on some level, walking around. Like, she should be hearing about it from people.
Well, there have been like 60 people arrested outside her office in the last several months.
Wow.
Which I'm sure she's noticing that. So I think she is getting that to some degree.
Well, so what's your best guess? What happens over the next couple of days?
I don't think there will be a vote. Like, they keep pretending that there's going to be a vote, but the votes aren't there. I think it's, so next week is the last week before recess. And so I think they'll come up there. I think they will announce some framework that they've of a deal. I think probably will use some shenanigans around, tax credits and dynamic scoring and other things to make it
get
look
the
like
number down.
Manchin
make
took
it
more
look
off
like,
of it.
Right.
The front load as much as they can and more or less agree to that. But I don't think progressives will vote to pass the bipartisan bill before heading out.
That's interesting. Well, Ryan Grimm, we will see if you're right. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yep.
Thanks, Ryan.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Wrap things up. All right, folks, if you're watching us on Peacock, that is it for us this week. Thanks so much for joining us, and we will see you again next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And for those of you who are still here, hello.
That's the Trump bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Hello. Hello. Want to remind you, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Check out Just Coffee, folks. They got the Majority Report blend. That's my weekday blend. That's my weekday blend. But they also have teas and chocolate. You know who is a big fan of tea? I think our next guest is, actually. He is here on phone. Want to make sure that... okay, good. All right. And let's bring him on, ladies and gentlemen. He is the host of the David Feldman Show. I also believe he may be an Emmy Award... Well, maybe nominee. I don't think he's ever won one.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. David, you're speaking on a phone. Are you speaking anywhere near a phone?
Yeah. Can you hear? I'm having one of those weeks. Can you hear? It's like we live in a third world country.
All right. Well, you need to speak. Yeah, we can hear you. Just got to continue to speak into the phone.
Yeah. It's one of those weeks. This is a third world country. Broadband. Pathetic.
Broadband is.
How do I sound?
You sound like you're calling on a cup with a string. To be honest with you,
but... Well, let me try it this way. I hate my life. I just everything hang on. I'm really sorry about this.
Well, no, you seem to be doing okay. Hang on. That's fine. David, let me just ask you this.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, I'm really sorry about this, but this is the country we live in, Sam.
No,
the infrastructure, it's the infrastructure. And I'm just, I have no internet. The broadband in my apartment building is clogging. You know, I have dial-up, but the building has broadband, and so it makes the dial-up even slower. Anyway, hi, Emma.
You're calling from a phone.
It's a dial-up phone.
I just want to ask you, did you say that you have dial-up internet?
Yeah. Yeah. I live simply.
You live in New York, though, right? Don't you? Or you live in a major metropolitan area. Let's put it that way.
If you think New York City is a major, for you, you would, you know, New York is a major metropolitan area because you're a bit of a hick. So, yes, you would come to New York City and think, wow, this is a big city. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I'm in a bad mood.
No, I could see that. I could see that. But I'm just struck by, well, now I'm struck by two things. One, that you have dial-up internet, which, I mean, I haven't even heard of anybody who lives anywhere that is, like, you know, where there's a neighbor within 15, 25 miles who has used dial-up service in over 20 years, A. Yeah. And B, what city do you consider big, if not New York?
Well, I'll tell you, a city that's getting too big is Washington, D.C.
Too big for its britches, huh?
Well, you know, Emma, I'm sure you have broadband because, you know, it's all let's get the newest thing. Let's, you know, let's spend money we don't have. Let's get broadband because I can't wait 5 minutes to download The Guardian. You know, and this is the problem with our side. You know, this is the you know, we're all on the same team. We're Democrats. We're blue, no matter who. I'm a Marxist. You pretty much know that I'm a Marxist, right?
You're Marxist from way back, almost like the time of Marx.
I'm a small government Marxist. And this is not working. This is not working. What's going on in Washington right now, Pramila Jayapal, I like her, but she is the leader of the Progressive Caucus, and she is a bad cop. She is a rogue cop, and she murdered that beautiful bipartisan infrastructure bill last night. It's lying in a pool of blood right now, and it's on life support, and she just wants to kick the ventilator out and watch it die. And we gotta stop her and Bernie, who I love Bernie, but this is an embarrassment. This is a disgrace.
Well, they just didn't take the vote yet.
They humiliated Nancy Pelosi. Humiliated. And it looks bad. They're making the Biden administration look bad. And they want a civil war. Bernie, and I love Bernie. I love him. But I look at the Democrats. It's a crack up. It's like Israel. I look at the Democratic Party and it's like Israel, Sam, Emma. We're looking at Israel, you know, and it's a
death. How so?
Well, the progressives are the Palestinians. And then you have the moderates, Manchin, Sinema, Gottheimer. Who doesn't love Gottheimer? He solves a lot of problems. I cannot tell you how many times I grew up with Josh Gottheimer. He's a problem solver. And sometimes I can't, you know, the Wednesday New York Times crossword puzzle called Josh Gottheimer, Biden, Schumer, they're the Israelis. right? And this party is going to be destroyed because both sides need to come to the bargaining table and compromise. The moderate Democrats, like the Israelis, they have to be willing to give an inch. And the progressives, like the Palestinians, have to be willing to live in an open-air sewer. Otherwise, the whole thing falls apart. And I just don't think, I'm not optimistic about the Democratic Party. I'm really disappointed with Bernie and Pramila Jayapal. You know, they want everything. They're like the Palestinians. They want drinkable water, housing, medical care, food for their kids, schools, economic, socioeconomic mobility. Yeah, yeah. I mean, where are the adults who are going to say to these progressives, yes, who doesn't want that? But you have to give and take. It's all compromise. And I don't think this is what Bernie and the progressives understand. You know, I'm not a child, Sam.
I know you're not a child.
You know, like, I would like faster internet, but how are we going to pay for that? How do you pay for this?
Well, I mean, you tax it. You tax.
Okay. See, tax and spend. I told you I am a small government Marxist. I don't believe in tax and spend. And I don't think taxing solves. Okay. Big Pharma. Negotiating with Big Pharma on Medicare. It's a good idea, right?
It's a great idea. It doesn't even involve taxing, but it would raise...
Exactly. How are you going to pay for that? How do you pay for negotiating with Big Pharma? You can't tax that problem away. That's nothing to do with taxes.
Now,
how are you
going
to pay for that?
David, I think you're confused about the dynamic here. When you negotiate...
Oh, now it's a personal tax. I'm confused. Now we're attacking me. I don't like the tone of your voice, quite frankly.
I think maybe that's your phone. Maybe your phone is just it's because I'm just trying to explain to you that with the negotiation, Medicare negotiating with Big Pharma about the drug costs, this is the government paying for these drugs for people on Medicare. It could save $600 billion over the course of 10 years.
Of course, but how do you pay for it? If you can't tax it,
well, you pay for it with the savings that you're expending.
I don't mean to be condescending, but you're an infant. All I hear is goo goo gaga, mama, 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 mommy. Where's my breast milk, mommy? So I can feed off the teat of big government.
I gotta tell you, I can't tell you how strongly I've. Wish that we had cleaner audio of you saying that, but that's not the point, David.
You're saying my audio isn't clean. You're attacking my audio.
I'm
a guest on your show, and you're saying I have dirty audio.
No, I'm not saying you have dirty audio. I forgive me. I apologize. That was out of line.
I'm all for clean audio. Climate change. Okay, you're a child. And don't take this the wrong way.
Right, no.
You do not, don't take this the wrong way, but you haven't developed yet. And climate change, okay? Right. I hate the oil companies. You know that.
No, I know that. Of course.
I loathe the oil companies.
You hate them.
And and we are subsidizing, we are giving billions, and I read The Intercept. Do you read Ryan Grimm in The Intercept?
Yeah, in fact, we just interviewed him on the show.
Well, did he tell you, did you know that our government is subsidizing the oil companies? That we literally give, you know that, Emma?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's insanity. That's fiscal insanity. The climate is falling apart, and our government is giving money to Exxon, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So... theoretically, it would make sense to cut the subsidies to big oil, right?
Right.
Well, practically.
How do you pay for that? How do you pay for that?
How do you pay for that?
How do you pay for the cuts?
How do you pay for not giving big oil those subsidies?
Well,
if the world smelled like cinnamon and all we had to eat was cupcakes, I would be for, yeah, cut the subsidies to Exxon. But you can't tell me how to pay for it.
Well, you don't need to. When you stop paying somebody, there's no expense associated with that. There's savings.
I'm sorry. I just hear goo goo gaga, mommy, mommy, I'm hungry. Whip out your government teat and feed me. That's all I hear from you infants.
I mean, that's all I hear.
Now it's me now, too, huh?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, grow up.
Turn, David.
Cutting the Pentagon. Yes, 20% off the top of the Pentagon. Great idea. How do you pay for it?
Well, did you? David.
I feel like you're being
purposefully obtuse in some way. I mean, I think people are familiar with the concept that when you are paying for something and you stop paying, let me put it this way. Do you pay for your dial-up internet?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Let's say you decided I'm not going to pay for my dial-up internet. I don't need the internet. I'm watching Matlock. I get it on over-air TV or, you know, Murder, She Wrote or whatever it is.
10 o'clock, Murder, She Wrote, 11:30.
Right.
Yeah.
So you cut your internet. Do you have to pay for that?
Again, I'm not trying to be rude. You sound like a one-year-old child who has been sucking off the government teat for 60 years, and now your diaper is full and you're cranky.
But how could I suck off the government teat for 60 years if I'm 1 year old?
All right. You're just an egg. You know, the thing about the left, and I am a Marxist, but you're vicious. You're vicious. That's the problem with our side. You are on my side. I mean, what? You're vicious. The way you talk to me, the way Emma, I hear Emma laughing at me. And I've watched her demonize Joe Manchin. That has to stop. I mean, it really.
Well, what did you think about him on his yacht saying that we're going to tax the rich and the celebrities, which I think you should probably be a little bit concerned about.
Yeah. You're talking about heaven, his yacht.
Almost heaven. Have you been there?
I call it heaven because that's where Lindsey Graham caught COVID.
Oh,
so to me, that's heaven.
Yeah.
I have a problem with Lindsey Graham because I'm a Democrat.
Right, of course. Of course.
And I don't mind demonizing the other side, but don't demonize our team. Joe Manchin is on our side and he's my brother. Is Joe Manchin your brother?
No.
Is he a Democrat?
He's not my brother. No, but let me ask you this, Dave.
Well, you're saying he's a woman? You're saying he's your sister?
No, I'm saying he's of no relationship to me.
He's your brother. He's part of our family, the Democratic family. And Emma.
But he is going against. Now, wait a second. No, wait a second. I want you to address this because I let you like filibuster for a long time. Like you monologued on this quite a bit.
I suppose you want to get rid of that too, right?
Well, I mean, based upon this experience, I certainly do.
All right.
Well, wait, can I make a point?
Go right ahead.
You are blaming.
Take the pacifier out of your mouth.
You are blaming. I'm just going to ignore your. I mean, you're getting insulting.
Not me. My brother. If you're still a Democrat, you're my brother.
Listen, you claimed that the progressives were, going off on their own. They are defending Joe Biden's agenda. Right. This is like pre-negotiated. This is the agenda that Joe Biden signed off on. It is Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema who are obstructing
my sister.
It's your sister and your brother who are obstructing.
My sister and my brother.
Your sister and your brother who are obstructing the entire Democratic administration's project, essentially.
What are you talking about? There's an infrastructure bill waiting to pass. It's
but
sitting
that's,
there.
That is literally 1/6 of the agenda, and it's really not even as poignant as the rest of the agenda.
It's something.
But how is that even remotely like equitable or fair to Joe Biden, who I imagine in your mind is like either your older
your
brother, maybe your dad.
He's your dad, yeah.
Who's your daddy? Hang on, you kids want instant gratification. You pass this bipartisan infrastructure bill, right? Right.
Right. Well, okay.
Well, I want to see where you're going with this.
For the sake of argument,
agree.
And let's see if we like it before we get another kitten. Let's see if we like this cat first. Let's give it some time, and then if you take care of this infrastructure bill and you're responsible and you change the box, then maybe we'll talk about Bernie's bill. But yeah. First, prove to me that you can handle this bipartisan infrastructure bill that was carefully pruned and shaped by Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. I mean, Joe Manchin, he's not your enemy. I mean, you have to have somebody to demonize. The man represents West Virginia. You know, I know you coastal. I know that Emma, I think according to Jimmy Dore, cul-de-sac. Is there a cul-de-sac in your life?
I've heard rumors of a cul-de-sac, but really it's just a suburban street line.
Well, I watch Jimmy Dore. That's where I get my information from. Mm. And he accused you of being a cul-de-sac, as I remember. I don't know what a cul-de-sac is, but that's a big word for Jimmy Dore to use, cul-de-sac.
Well, it's actually, so, I mean, to be fair, it's three words. But.
Wow, did he accuse me of being a cul-de-sac?
I think I heard there was so much vitriol and saliva and misogyny spewing from my hero, Jimmy Dore, when I think he was using a French pejorative. I think he said, Emma is a cul-de-sac. That's what I heard. Listen,
you're right.
I don't pay it. Listen, when it comes to Jimmy Dore, it's not what he says. It's how he says it.
Right.
It's the music. It's not the lyrics. The point is he hates women. That's what it sounds.
Look.
I don't know. Maybe you're a cul-de-sac. Maybe you're not a cul-de-sac. The point is you've never been to West Virginia the way Jimmy and I have.
I've been to West Virginia.
Have you walked along the Appalachian Trail with the Appalachians? Have you talked to the people of West Virginia the way Joe Manchin? Have you talked to? I'm not a cul-de-sac. Okay, mm-hmm. I talked to the people in West Virginia with their bloated bellies, and they live in cardboard shanties, and I sit down on their dirt floors and ask them what they need. These are Joe Manchin's constituents. And you know what they want? Fiscal responsibility. That's what they want. But you wouldn't know that because you're a cul-de-sac.
You have a point there. I never sat on the floor of a West Virginia shanty.
Okay. So you're saying, I'm not quite sure what you're saying. You seem to have taken like a little bit of a turn here.
I'm saying you gotta look, it's give and take. Okay.
It's give and take. If you're talking about, $4.5 trillion worth of spending, that is proposed, wouldn't the give and take be somewhere around 2.75?
The give and take is,
or I should say, 1.7. I mean, I guess, 2 or 2.25, I guess, maybe.
Okay. First of all, you know nothing about negotiations, okay? You can't have give and take at the same time. So somebody has to give and somebody has to take.
No, you have give and take at the same time. That is exactly
you
what
can't.
Happens.
You cannot give and take at the same time.
Well, one party can't. Well, actually, one party could theoretically give and take at one time, but you cannot have give without take on the other side. I mean, if you have two parties.
Yeah, there are two parties, but in any relationship, at one point somebody is giving and one point somebody is taking. And now is the time for our side, you know, the Marxists, the leftists in the Democratic Party, to give, and the Godheimers should be allowed to take. And then when we see what they've done with all the stuff that we've given them after a couple of years, then it's our turn, assuming, you know, we have a majority in the House and we still have the Oval Office, then we can take. But you can't give and take at the same time.
So you've got to give a lot before you can take, is what you're saying.
Yes, right. You got to give a lot.
But David, do you think that there's going to be an opportunity anytime soon to have the scenario you're talking about? I mean,
We have an existential threat. Donald Trump, we have the most important midterms coming up of my lifetime. Our democracy is at stake. I think all of us should be willing to go without to save our democracy. I don't think children need health care. I think they should be willing to give up their health care, their food, and live on the streets. We all have to sacrifice for democracy. And you're not part of the greatest generation. Compromise, okay? The infrastructure, bridges and roads. Do we need the roads? I like bridges. Bridges are beautiful. They're a testament to man's ingenuity. Do we need roads?
Well,
why does it have to be bridges and roads? Why can't it just be bridges?
Well, I mean, theoretically, you need to get to the bridges. But I mean, if you're suggesting that maybe we do, I don't know, some type of train upgrade, I'd be okay with that.
You know, I'm amazed at your stupidity. Bridges and roads. What's on a bridge? What do you drive on when you're on a bridge?
It could be a train.
If you're driving over a bridge, what's below your tires?
Oh, road. if I'm driving or if I'm riding, because I can do both.
I don't know why you would take mass transit. That seems inefficient. Well,
I take the train quite often.
Well, that's congratulations for your virtue signaling. Yes.
That's not
congratulations.
It's not virtue signaling. Yeah. I'm taking the train.
Okay. All right. You don't need bridges and roads. There are already roads on bridges. This is government waste. If you would think before you spoke.
All right, so David, we've got to land this here. So I just want to be clear on what you're advocating. You think that it is incumbent upon the 50, maybe more, Democrats in the House to capitulate to the 8 or 9 corporatists in the House and the 2 in the Senate.
Yes.
You think they should capitulate to them?
For the time being.
For the time being. And what do you think that time frame should be? Give me just a rough ballpark.
Let's see what happens with this bipartisan infrastructure bill first. Bernie's,
you're suggesting wait 4 or 5 years at least, maybe more. Do stuff like negotiate with, prescription drugs. Like, for instance, what does building a bridge?
How do you pay for that? You keep bringing that up.
Well, you're it's okay like with you paying for the bridge,
but not the roads.
Compromise.
It's all about compromise.
Well,
I see your point now.
You know what? There's this. It's cute. There's a delicious naivete that that's why I like watching your show. I once said famously that watching a bill pass through Congress is like watching a sausage getting made. Because it's more effective than Viagra for me. I said that. I find it very intoxicating to watch a sausage getting made.
Wait a second. You're famous for saying that watching legislation get. Are you building something in your house?
I have a houseboat. I have a houseboat, and we're remodeling the houseboat.
All right.
I said that. Yeah, it's like watching a sausage getting made, and Bernie's kielbasa. Can I be indelicate here? Do you mind? Because it's lunchtime. I don't want to get people salivating. But Bernie's $3.5 trillion kielbasa, as eye-watering as it is, I think it's scaring a lot of Americans. They look at the size of Bernie's kielbasa, and they say, you know what? That's going to hurt. I can handle Bernie's kielbasa, but most Americans are going to look at the size of that $3.5 trillion sausage and say, go stick that in some other country, not here in America. Right. Maybe one day, when we're older, we'll have an appetite for a larger kielbasa. But Bernie, it's gigantic. I'm not saying Bernie's kielbasa isn't appealing, but you don't jam a $3.5 trillion kielbasa into a country that's barely 250 years old.
Listen, David, it has been a pleasure to have you on today. Appreciate your insight into this. It's it has been... insightful
we're all brothers and sisters, and I'm a Marxist. I'm a small government Marxist.
You're a small kielbasa Marxist, and Bernie's too big for you. We get it.
Well, read Karl Marx. Okay.
Right.
It was Karl Marx who said the government doesn't create jobs, it destroys jobs. That's what Karl Marx said. Or maybe it was Ayn Rand. Who wrote The Fountainhead? Was it Marx or Ayn Rand?
It was Marx.
It was Ayn Rand.
Oh, yeah, okay.
No, it was not Rand. Marx. She's joking. It was it was Ayn Rand.
I just wanted David, to see where that went.
Yeah, David, I mean, just...
You met my son, Rand. Did you meet my son, Rand Feldman?
I did not.
How about my daughter, Milton Friedman Feldman?
Yes. She's lovely, I'm sure. David.
She is.
Well, do you want to, when's your show on?
I don't come on your show to plug my show.
Well,
that's not why I'm here. I'm here because
you're our brother.
We're brothers and sisters.
Yep.
And we just need to go slowly and ignore the suffering of others. That's all I'm asking the Democrats to do, is block the suffering of others out of your mind.
Well, words to live
by. That's how we move into the light.
David, always a pleasure. Yep.
Peace. Be kind to others. Be kind to others.
Thank you, David.
That's how I sign off. Be kind to others and ignore their suffering.
So that you're not overspending on them. So
live within
your means. Yep.
Yes.
David, thank you so much for your
thank you.
Oops. Well, that was quite an experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's not
a lot to think about.
A lot to think about with that.
Good to have a Marxist back on the show, though.
Yes, it is. It is nice. Nice.
Bring
full
some
on.
Left voices on.
Full on. Get that. Well, David Feldman, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know what to tell you. We're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half of the program. Remember, it is your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, don't forget our Discord, majoritydiscord.com. Over 4,000 people in it. If you want the AM quickie, go to majority.fm, scroll down, put your email address in the email address form. Don't forget justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use your coupon code, get 10% off. Matt, what's happening in the Matt Leckian media universe?
For patrons of Left Reckoning, this weekend we'll be talking with Sam Hoadley Brill, who's been covering what I'm calling the CRT party, which is the new version of the Tea Party for Joe Biden's administration, where you're having parents go to school boards and basically say that they're brainwashing their children with CRT. Discussing that, as well as two major figures in that, Chris Rufo and James Lindsay, conceptual James himself. So that would be for patrons, patreon.com/leftreckoning. They'll be out on Sunday.
All right, folks. See you in the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, back.
Just as delicious as you could imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it to my throat.
Alpha males are back, back. Back, back.
Snowflake says what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back, back.
Oh no, Sam Cedar, what a fucking nightmare!
Yeah, or a couple of them, just put them in rotation.
DJ Dinner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough for the breaks to do that.
That's fucking nonsense.
See white people doing drugs that look worse than normal white people, and all white people look disgusting.
And the alpha males,
psych, fuck them, fuck them.
Snowflake says what?
What?
Snowflake says what?
A hell of a lot of bang. A hell of a lot of bang. A hell of a lot of bank. Okay. I'm making stupid money. Hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank.
All lives matter.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black African. And the alpha males are black, 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 black. And the Africans are back, 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 back.
When you see Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100. Can't knock the hustle. Come on! Fuck them! Fuck them!
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday! Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are black, black. Africans are back, back.
Come on!
To pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total pussy.